So this morning we started by talking about the primary object, having a primary object like the breath or the posture or awareness as the kind of where you choose to direct your attention to initiate the continuity of awareness. And then not meaning to hang on to that exclusively, we allowed the attention to notice other predominant experience. When strong sensations in the body call your attention, then you don't avoid them to stay with the breath. You quite naturally, your mind will go to the predominant experience of the present moment. So to try to hang on to a subtle experience like the breath, when there's a more predominant experience like discomfort in the body, causes a lot of tension in the mind, a lot of dissonance in the mind. You're trying to pay attention to the subtlety of the breath, and there's this big elephant stepping on your knee. You go, argh. So the mind gets really split. The mind gets dissonant. So part of your mind is trying to go over there and do the breath, but part of your mind is going and paying attention to the back, and then the part of your mind is going to what should I be doing? Should I be doing this or that? And you're trying to figure out how to get rid of the pain, and so your mind gets really fractured. Your mind is going off in all kinds of different directions initially. So then we use the breath. We've noticed other predominant objects, and then we expanded, or we quite naturally noticed a fuller range of experience, from both physical sensations to mental states to different cognitive activities of mind. And then kind of ended the morning talking about right attitudes of mind, how to practice. So I want to spend a little more time on the understanding to bring to practice is we're not cultivating a certain kind of experience. We're not just looking for the breath with some continuity. Although I will acknowledge that the Buddha did teach a meditation which is just on the breath. For you just use the breath over and over and over again to develop deep samadhi or tranquility. And it can be used, that kind of samadhi can be used to develop insight also. So I'm not saying that that's not a good practice. I'm just saying that's not what I'm going to be teaching here. So when we use the breath, we use it just as an initiation, the doorway, gateway object into the fullness of physical, mental, emotional experiences. So we're not cultivating any particular experience. We're not looking for some kind of experience. We're not looking for some exotic, esoteric, enlightening experience. We just want to know the simplicity of just the ordinariness. But it doesn't take long before we get into pretty, intense, sometimes intense and dramatic and painful, or and at times pleasant, very pleasant experiences. So what we miss all the time that we're looking at the breath, the breath arises, being known. Knee pain arises, being known. Thoughts arise, being known. Moods arise, are being known. Other things arise, being known. Things arise and are being known simultaneously. If they don't arise, there's no knowing of them, right? And if there's no knowing, there's no object. So there's always an object being known, object being known. And the objects in Vipassana practice can be anything. Physical, mental, emotional, subtle or gross, familiar or novel, but there's something that's always being known every moment. So we're not cultivating a continuity of object. What we're really doing is cultivating a continuity of awareness. But most of the time, and most of the meditations that you'll be taught, is paying attention to the object, paying attention to the breath, paying attention to recognize all these things that we've talked about this morning. And one of the foundations of mindfulness, or one of the experiences to attend to with this kind of recognition of awareness is the awareness itself, this thing. So as this is going on, and mostly we're focusing or noticing or getting the unique nature. I talked about the unique nature of fear, the unique nature of hardness, the unique nature of impatience, unique nature, all of these things. That's what we're doing with these objects. What we keep missing is, oh, there's this awareness going on. So the kind of practice I want to kind of move to this afternoon is learning how to recognize this awareness. It's not that we recognize this to the exclusion of this. There has to be an object for there to be awareness. But it's like just shifting the emphasis of your attention from recognizing the object to recognizing the awareness. So, if I hold this up and ask you, what do you see? What do you see? A cup. What else do you see? Huh? You see a hand holding a cup. Anything else? White. Anything else? The what? The wall behind the cup. Okay, now we're getting into the universe. There's a universe that this is happening. No, okay. Okay. Anything else?
Decoration on the
cup. A little decoration on the cup. The shape of the cup. Okay. So now we have shape, color, name, texture, location, context, right? Hand holding cup, right? We have all these different views of this thing, but there's only one thing. There's just this. That's all there is. It's just this. But we've got four or five or six different perspectives to take on it, right? But we're still seeing the same thing. Every one of you is seeing the same thing. It's just that you have a different lens on the mind seeing this. So what we're doing with awareness practice is we're looking at different objects. A cup, a bell, a mallet, a clock, bing-dong, bing-dong. But instead of the different objects, we want to recognize the mind that is knowing them. Now, sensations in the body are very tangible. They're very gross. They're very noticeable. They have a location, they have a quality, they have a duration, they're just very, very easy to recognize or feel sensations. Thoughts in the mind are quick. They don't have a location, they certainly have a texture, and they're pretty easy to notice, right? But they're a little subtler than sensations in the body. Moods in the mind, if they're strong emotions, they're very noticeable, but they're very elusive. Where does the emotion take place? We feel sensations conditioned by those emotions, but the emotion is a mental state. Where's that? Where are mental states located? You know, some people say here, some people say here, and yet they really don't have a location. Moods and emotions. The impulse or the intention in the mind to shift the body, you know, when somebody was saying, oh, should I stop sitting now or should I stop sitting later? And the debate starts, you know, well, if I sit there a little longer, I'll be a good yogi, but if I sit now, that'd be compassionate to myself, and you know. But at some point you move. Okay. Who moved? What moved? You know, we think, well, I moved. But actually, when you look at the conditioning that led up to the movement of the body, it was compassion, desire, fear of hurting yourself, whatever, whatever. One of those mental states conditioned an impulse in the mind, move. The impulse in the mind conditioned the movement. The movement conditioned the relief. Where are you? Which one are you? Are you the impulse? Are you the intention? Are you the compassion? Are you the fear? Are you the... Which one is you? You didn't give rise to any of those. They just arose automatically due to their own causes and conditions. But if we don't see the individual conditioning from cause-effect, 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 we think, This is me. I made the decision to move. Well, conventionally speaking, yeah, you did. You made the condition. You made the intention to move. But when you break it all down into moment-to-moment cause-effect from one moment to the next, there's no you in there. I'm going to turn the mic off for a minute. No, the mic. I'm hot.